Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
The last two times we've recorded this, call recorder has started momentarily late, and I've missed the hi, Dan, which ruins the whole thing for me.
That's really all we've got.
That's basically our theme song is the do-do-do, hi, Dan. So we don't have that. Why are we even here?
I don't know. I pushed my iMac off my desk, so all things are going well
here.
Wow,
what
did
it do to you? Man.
Well, I was trying to just...
get it off.
I was like, the screen looks a little dusty. I'll just dust it. It's so light that I started sliding back down the desk. I was like,
Don't do that.
Don't go away.
That's a bad idea.
I need you, iMac.
Oh, what's going on?
Not much. Writing my Macworld column for the week, in which I am waxing hypothetical about a device that I would like that will never get made. Which is
it the mythical mid-range mini tower?
No, it's not, because I'm putting that aside for that's not mine.
Right.
That's not my quest.
Is it? Is it an iOS laptop? Because that one's mine.
No, you're getting warmer. This was spawned from the fact that I recently, I don't remember if we discussed it on the program or not, but I recently bought a Switch.
Ah, yes.
So I want a device that is a portable device that I can drop in a dock and have a full, like, desktop experience. A la, I was comparing it in my article to, of course, Apple did traverse this path briefly in the 90s with the Duo.
Yes.
And obviously you can still dock your laptops, but I love the idea. I mean, I was super impressed with the hardware on the Switch. It is a really, really clever device. And to the point where, like, I didn't even really realize, I was setting it up and I was doing what I always do on my Xbox when I'm entering text, is like using the little cursors and selecting letters. And then I had that moment of, wait, it's 2017. Is this a touchscreen? I was like, oh, it's a touchscreen. I could just type on it like a touchscreen.
I know, right?
And I was like, I didn't even realize. I mean, in retrospect, I'm like, well, duh, of course it's a touchscreen. But it was funny not to really put that together until I actually was sitting there and, like, just had that thought, like, maybe I can touch the screen. And the fact that even though it, you know, it's never going to compete hardware-wise with, like, an Xbox or a PlayStation, it doesn't have the same power in it, but the context and the portability of being able to take your same gaming experience with you when you leave is just a sort of orthogonal feature that is impossible to compete with. So the idea of an Apple device that, you know, and I know there are so many potential pitfalls and questions and reasons they wouldn't want to do this. I understand all that. And like I said, prefacing up top, this is a device I feel like I would dig that I'm not sure anybody else would or that they will ever make. But that said, there are some affordances that you could get out of this that would solve some things that Apple has found thorny in the past. And I'm thinking particularly in one thing. Those of us who have many different devices, and I have just like a plethora of devices, right? Everything from an Apple Watch all the way up to an iMac, you know, that kind of runs the gamut there. And I think about the frustrations that come with trying to keep all your devices in sync, maintaining different data stores on different devices, trying to make sure that you have the information you need on one device to another device, transferring data between devices. And it's kind of messy, right? Like, I try not to maintain files, duplicate files in different places, and certainly Dropbox and iCloud Drive and all that stuff helps with it. But it's still not perfect in that regard. And it is, you know, it's not a seamless experience. The seams show at times.
Yeah.
And syncing between devices in particular has been tricky for Apple. You look at, you know, iMessage and stuff like that, and there are some bugs and some frustrations, and Apple's clearly struggled with that. I mean, you look at, we were talking the other day about iMessage in the cloud, which has kind of gone back into the cloud again since Apple's not really talking about
hiding,
where it went.
Hiding
in the cloud.
Somebody on, I think, the Six Colors member Slack suggested that it's possible that they might have run into some imperial entanglements. It's like, you know, does that, if you're storing everything in the cloud, are there issues there in terms of security and making sure that it can't be subpoenaed? You know, because right now they're not saving your your messages in the cloud. They're just transferring them to your device. So this would leave a copy encrypted, but leave a copy in the cloud. And I wonder if they have some issues with something like that.
That's sure. Yeah,
it's possible.
But syncing those, maintaining all those messages across different devices is, it's very hard. It's a hard problem. There are, what, billions of iMessages going around? I don't remember what this time frame is, but whenever they throw out a number there, it's kind of mind-boggling. And I run into plenty of problems. The other day, I opened up my MacBook, and I think I had used it recently, but all of a sudden, I just started getting all these notifications for messages that were from Christmas, and I'm like, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I was like, I have no idea what's happening. I don't know why these messages are here. I got all these messages at the time. But why are they popping in now on this Mac? I have no idea. I have no idea. So the idea of having a single device or that replaces maybe a couple different devices and lets me take this context with me, you know, wherever I go, is appealing. That's basically where I come down to this.
Yeah, so... Oh, by the way, for people who love verisimilitude, my laundry is going in the background.
It's very soothing.
It's spinning now. So we actually talked about a version of this on Download today because Razer showed off this thing called Project Linda that basically is you take the Razer phone and you snap it into a laptop case as a trackpad, and it powers it powers the laptop. Like the laptop, it has a keyboard and a screen. So the screen, using Android, the screen goes out and it becomes like a laptop where the phone is the trackpad.
Microsoft pitched something like this a couple of years ago.
Samsung has done it
or something.
And there's of course the Palm Folio, which kind of did a version of this too, sort of. Here's my problem with it, because when I think about this, I start to think, well, okay, I could have a dock on my desk and slide my smartphone or my computer into it. I could have a laptop dock that I could slide my smartphone into because they've got the power for it. And then I think, all right, well, first off, you could probably do a lot of that with Bluetooth now or some similar wireless technology where it's just driving the screen and you don't need to slide it in anywhere.
I could pop it on my little wireless charging pad right here.
And then... But if you go further and it's like, well, look, if everything is in the cloud and synced properly, why not have the laptop be a laptop, not like a laptop shell without a brain, and just use whatever device is right for the moment, but not have it be kind of like this device that isn't really all there until you attach it to something else. Because I get the appeal that we all have a smartphone in our pocket that's like a supercomputer and it's got all the power to be a computer. So why do we need another computer? But at the same time, is that what's going to happen? Is instead of having laptops, we're going to have weird kind of like laptop shaped shells that you stick a phone into? It seems more likely that we'll just have a laptop and it will be syncing to the same stuff that the phone is syncing with, and it just all works together. It strikes me that is a more realistic dream that we get syncing right than that we start to create like docks and shells for our products.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that the you know. Frankly, I feel like if we could do syncing right, someone would have done it by now. But there's been it's a hard problem, it turns out. And I'm not saying this is an easier problem, but I think there is an argument for. I mean, you look at the specs on an iPhone these days and people start comparing them up against Mac specs in many cases. Right. And it's not to say, again, they're different processors. I understand this. You're not going to pack necessarily the same power that you're certainly not going to get an iMac Pro level performance in an iPhone, right? Like, I'm not arguing that that's
certainly
the case. But, like, in the same way that you talked about wanting an iOS laptop, and that's something that might be a laptop, but also might have a tablet capability, the idea of not necessarily... I don't think necessarily even for me a laptop is what I'm looking for, but I do like the idea of, like, I'd sit down at my desk, I put my phone down on my little wireless charging pad, and then, bloop, the screen on my desk just becomes a window into whatever I was doing before. And maybe it's just because I don't need, like, a, you know, multi-$1,000 computer on my desktop necessarily, but I want, you know, a larger screen and a keyboard to work with at sometimes. And again, I don't think that Apple will make this necessarily. I don't think this is necessarily for everyone, but there is something about it that appeals to me. Also in terms of simplicity, in terms of not having all these different devices lying around, because certainly there's a proliferation of devices, you know, from everything, the iPhone, the iPad, a desktop, a laptop. Like, not everybody has all of these things, but most people have more than one. And you know, is managing all those devices becoming kind of a job in and of itself?
Yeah, I don't know. I write things in a folder on Dropbox on my Mac, and then just yesterday I did that, and then I went to my iPad and opened up Editorial, and it syncs with the same folder, and I open that file, and I keep writing, and then I come back to my Mac, and the file is there, and it's not a problem. I have syncing success these days way more than I have syncing failures. So for me, I feel like I'm kind of living the dream by doing it that way. But you know, I get the appeal of it, right? Because you're right. Why make more computer brains when you've got all the computer brain you ever need in your pocket? At the same time, though, the reality of it is what you end up with is this, like a set of accessories that are non-functional unless your computer brain is present. And presumably then, you know, we know how the world works. Then when you get your next computer brain, it doesn't work with the old version. So now you have to buy a new shell and the old shell goes away. And I'm not sure if the amount of electronics that has to go into the shell in which you insert your computer brain is any better than just having it be a laptop. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know either. I agree. I don't think necessarily what I'm picturing is the same as what these other companies are necessarily showing off. Because I think that you're totally right when it comes especially to the laptop form factor, that I feel like there's some weirdness there with having, it has to be an internal, like physical shell, like you're describing. Whereas I think something more like I'm sitting down at my desk, a la the old Duo, and there's essentially just
right.
a screen, a keyboard, and a trackpad, and I just pop my phone down on my little holder there, and all of a sudden I've got all my same right. stuff, but with a keyboard mouse interface. I mean, this is some of what we talked to too, with like this idea of where is the Apple platform, where are Apple's disparate platforms heading as well.
Right. I guess, I mean, and I think in a lot of these cases, not always, but sometimes when we try to picture the future and it's like, well, is it going to be this or going to be that? The answer ends up being
something
well,
else entirely.
It's or it's kind of both, and the distinction yeah. doesn't matter anymore. Which I mean, that's my feeling about the. We talked about this on Upgrade this week, that you know, that unified app platform thing that we also talked about. That I don't know. My feeling is that, like, is the future a new operating system that's neither iOS or Mac, or is the future that iOS becomes more capable and is picking up, you know, things that are more like Mac apps can run in certain configurations? And it's like, that's the same thing. And by the time
distinction
it,
without a difference,
exactly. And by the time it matters, by the time it happens, it won't matter. Like the difference won't matter.
Sure.
And it, that may be it, which is like, if the goal is that you've got hardware and you sit down and the context switches, there is an argument to be made that if the syncing is perfect, whether it's syncing with the cloud or it's syncing with your phone, right? Maybe mm-hmm. it doesn't matter what processor is being executed, right? Like, is it the processor in your phone? Is it the processor in the little dock you sat down at? Maybe it doesn't matter as long as it feels like you are seamlessly going from place to
right,
place to place.
Sure.
And I think the most important part of that is, you know, you work at home, so it's your iMac at home and it's your
right,
phone.
Sure.
But if you go into an office or a library or something like that, or a, you know, a Starbucks or whatever, imagine that there's a computer station there and you sit down at it. And it immediately does the same thing, right? Because it talks to your phone, and your phone knows what your interface is. Again, what's happening on that computer? Is it downloading your stuff from the cloud or from your phone and then logging in with a standard instance and running apps via the cloud or via your phone? Or is it just displaying a screen projected from your phone? In the end, it probably doesn't matter if it works.
Yeah, I mean, it probably doesn't, except in that case, I would argue there is a distinction there, which is that it's a lot more. There are more concerns about things like security and about your files,
I'm
depending
just sort
on how
of saying
that works.
That it's the same in the sense that if
looks the same,
and it would be. I'm assuming that it would be secure. That the only way that you would use a shared computer with your stuff would be that, you know, you basically come up to it and there's a key exchange and it gets access while your phone is in proximity to your files, and then your phone walks away and the key is thrown away or the key stays on the phone and something like that. I'm assuming that would happen. And if it is secure, I mean, because you could argue that even if it's just being projected from your phone, it's being received by that device. Is it secure? Like, there are security questions either way. I don't know. That for me, that is where we're going. And the question is, what are the steps in between? Because I do think that's a real thing. I do think all of this is about just having seamlessness, ultimately, not just on your devices, but the idea that you don't even need to have your devices. It could be as simple as, like, if you have an Apple Watch. Or sure. equivalent, or a pair of AR glasses.
That's kind
of
where I was thinking too.
If they don't contain all your data, they contain all the keys to your data that can be unlocked on any device in any location that, you know, and that device behaves the way that is proper for that device.
Sure. Right. I mean, and certainly, you know, I've worked in environments in the past where essentially you can go to any, you know, I worked in IT and stuff, and people could sit down at a different workstation, log in with their username and their password, and have all their stuff.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that was just, it made it easier for a support perspective, and it also made it easier from a user perspective. And it made it way easier if you need to, like, all right, your computer's, we're replacing your computer, bring in new hardware, you sit down, you log in, all your stuff's still there. You know, that certainly feels like it's a seamless experience that I'd like to see that. Apple gets pretty good, but I definitely run into things where, and some of it is not Apple's issue or not even my issue, but things like, oh, this app doesn't exist on one of my devices, right? Like, oh, I use this iPhone app that doesn't exist on my iPad. Like, that happens. Certainly going back and forth to Mac and iOS, that happens. There's things I have apps for on iOS that I need to use a website for on my Mac.
Right.
And there's things I do on my Mac that I can't do on my iOS device still.
The one that gets me is that I write and BB edit on my Mac and editorial on my iPad.
Sure, right.
And it's just,
or even Dropbox things like is, I was trying to do like a crossword that was only available in the New York Times site on the web. Can't get it in the New York Times crossword app.
Huh.
I don't know. They had different types of crosswords that I think probably just their app framework doesn't quite support on iOS or something like that. So it's like little things like that. And certainly, you know, things we've talked about before, like Instagram, there's no iPad app still. Weird, right?
Yeah.
So there's certainly like a lot of that stuff where those disconnects show. And that's not all Apple's fault, and it's not all the user's fault either. It's other people have chosen, you know, not to make that thing available. I don't know. I feel like we get closer and closer, but at the same time, because we all have, not all of us, but many of us have so many more devices than we did, say, 10 or 20 years ago, and they all do so much more stuff that it can sometimes feel like, oh no, there's like new software updates now today. You know, I have to go update 5 different devices in different places, right? And it certainly does feel like to a certain degree, we all have to become our own IT people. And that's fine for many of us, and it's not that big a deal. But the idea of being able to centralize a lot of those functions into a single device that can switch contexts, or having multiple devices that all have a window into that same data in the way that you're saying, I think is appealing. And I think it's a direction we'll be heading in one way or another, like that experience, even if it's not in the manner that we're predicting.
Yeah, I mean, when I think about the future of the Mac and the future of iOS and that Mark Gurman report about the like shared app framework, there are a lot of, again, it's the same thing, which is we know the goal. The question is, how do you get there? And that's where the money is made. That's where the salary you get paid as a manager and as a strategist at a company like Apple is worth it. It's like, how do you get to execute on a strategy that's the right strategy to get there? But that all said, I feel like the right strategy is that Apple software developers should be able to write their apps essentially once for all Apple platforms. The laundry spinning in the background, everybody enjoy that. Once for Apple platforms with variations for device size. Like, you should be able to say, I have a text editor and it looks like this on the phone and this on the iPad and this on a laptop and this on a big desktop. And you can use a mouse with it if you want, or a trackpad and a keyboard, or you can use touch depending on the context, and it behaves differently in those different contexts. Now, not every app developer is going to want to do that work, but I think like the ideal is that's what the Apple platform is whether you're writing for a watch or a phone all the way up to a 27-inch desktop display or a huge virtual display in AR glasses or something like that it knows the context, and the software has been written to take advantage of the context just just like, ideally, your iPad and iPhone software is today. And if that's the case, then it doesn't matter. Like, it literally doesn't matter that there's iOS and macOS, because it ceases to be a difference. Instead, there's desktops and laptops and phones.
Yeah.
And they are all from Apple, and they all run those apps. They just run them differently. And so in that world, theoretically, that app that I use, like Scrivener, let's say, because that exists on both. If you think about it, like, Scrivener knows how to behave in a touch context on a phone and on an iPad, and with a keyboard and mouse attached on a laptop or on a big desktop computer. Like, if you imagine it that way and it just scales like that, then the software isn't the problem anymore, and every different kind of hardware and input method can be the right one, you know, use the right one for you. I think that's where Apple wants to have this go, and using iOS as a base where it's more modern and there are more developers there is probably a way to do it. The question they have to ask themselves is basically, you know, how do we end up with a platform that's capable of running a to-do list app on a phone and Final Cut Pro on a desktop?
Sure, yeah.
That's the same.
I think a lot of people take this as like, oh, it's going to be run, you know, write once, run anywhere, which has been, you know, quote unquote, the dream in it for a lot of different solutions over the years. And I don't think certainly that's what they're going for.
No, it's not even
here.
True, now for the iPad and the iPhone,
sure,
right?
Absolutely. You have to, but like the idea of minimizing the amount of additional work that needs to be done on top of, look, you're going to write the underpinnings of your code. It's going to essentially run more or less the same, but you're going to need to tweak it for different contexts, because there isn't an easy way of, say, converting, okay, this is a mouse control on a desktop,
right,
this is a touch control on an iOS device. There's no like one-to-one correspondence.
If you think about it now, because of the different APIs developers are using, it's like that you use one language, not computing language, but like one language to talk about iOS, watchOS, tvOS apps, and a different one to do Mac apps, which is why the example I always give is Marco Arment, who's a very established iOS developer, and then he tried to write a Mac app, and he's like, whoa, like, what do I do? It's not it, because all the things that he learned on UIKit for iOS don't apply on the Mac. Like,
right,
it doesn't do that. It doesn't work that way. And
well,
that's what Apple's trying to fight, I think, ultimately, is like, how do we get people to build big desktop applications, whether we call them Mac applications or not? Just leaving that aside, being able to use the sort of same approach and context as iOS. And probably, how do we take iOS apps and let them scale to, you know, mouse and keyboard interfaces without feeling like totally bizarre, broken, fake touch interfaces?
I think what's interesting is that it feels more akin to me, you know, rather than saying it's like going from like English to Japanese or something, for me, it feels more akin to switching from like French to Spanish, right? Like they're romance languages. You know, these are two different languages with similar underpinnings, and you might start to be like, realize like, oh, okay, that word in this language is similar to this word in this language, like, but it's not like going from an entirely different language family to another. And I would even argue more to the point, like, more recently, since we have so many Mac devices that use trackpads that have multi-touch gestures on them, we in fact have gotten closer in that regard, right? Like, you can do the same sort of like swipes and scrolls on a Mac in many places, right? You look at the mail, for example, going between Mac and iOS, and there is like a swipe gesture that's similar on both of them. Like, the conventions have gotten closer in the last decade because, you know, Apple has, I think, tried to bring them a little bit, like, not trying to converge them necessarily 100%, obviously, but the language has made, things have made jumps from one to another, right? Like, borrow words in different languages. Things have made it from one side to another side and been adopted. And I think that's interesting, because it shows that not only is the computer manufacturer thinking about this, but people are getting accustomed to that, right? Like, harken back to, it was Lion, I think, right, where they changed the scrolling direction, and everybody freaked out for a week while they got used to scrolling in the other direction. And now, for me, that's second nature. I go and sit down at my dad's MacBook, which he does not like that scrolling direction, And it just freaks me out because it's like, wow, everything's scrolled. That doesn't make any sense. Why would you scroll in this direction? And yet I had done that for years before at that point.
Yeah. Yep. I don't know. I think it's the most interesting question for Apple right now.
Is, sure. Absolutely.
Is this.
Yeah. There's a lot changing with the pervasiveness of our technology, right? Like, especially 10 years into the smartphone. All the things that you do every day on your phone that are just like matter of course, like just things like, oh yeah, I bought some movie tickets, that I've got the little barcode on my phone or whatever. Just everything that it pervades in all these parts of your lives. And I think that's an arrow, right? Like, that's not like, all right, we've gotten as pervasive as we're going to get.
Yeah.
It's like, no,
oh,
this
no,
stuff
you're right.
is going to keep going in that direction.
Totally. Totally true. All right. Well, I think maybe we'll end it there. Thanks to everybody who updated their feed, by the way, because we did that last week and we warned everybody. And here we are, which means if you're hearing this, you are here too. Because otherwise, if you kept the old feed, this episode's not there. So thanks. Tell
so
your friends who are members. Or just thanks for making the way over. I try to keep making it as easy as possible. It's not that easy. But I feel like every few years I want to change it just so that if there's somebody who bought a membership 3 years ago and hasn't had it for 2.5 years, like at some point they should not be able to coast and listen to the podcast if they're not supporting the site. So I'm not going to do it a lot because I know it's a pain. Max Fun does it every year. They basically do their Max Fun drive and change the bonus URL. I'm not going to do that, but every so often. So thanks for making your way over here to the new home of the Secret Podcast. All right. Doing anything this weekend? You're going away, like me. We're both going away for the weekend.
I'm actually going to be here, but I'm going to be doing... I am going to be, as is my wont, over at MIT
solving
for the
puzzles.
Annual Mystery Hunt Solving Puzzles.
Oh, man. So Lauren is building an escape room for the library. And,
oh, that sounds awesome.
She tried some of her puzzles on me last night, and I wasn't in the best frame of mind for it, but I completely failed. Which was great.
So you're stuck in the room, is what you're
which
saying.
Which was great, because she was like, okay, tell me what you did and what you were thinking and all that. And she's like, all right, that's good information. But yeah, I had no idea what she was. So we tweaked
making
some of
puzzles
the,
is hard.
We tweaked some
difficult.
Of the puzzles and all that, because I think she wants to have it be not super easy but also solvable.
Yeah.
So I told her that at some point, if she really wants more testers, I know a bunch of people who like solving puzzles.
It's true.
So
yeah, I'm practicing my puzzle work. I've started trying to solve cryptic crosswords. Is my new hobby, which is, let me tell you. It is a different sort of
those are like mental skill. Those are like British crosswords, right?
Yes, they are. They are, in fact, those are typical British crosswords, yeah. And they are tricky.
Yeah, I remember I first heard about them. I was reading a book, and I want to say it was Inherit the Stars by James P. Hogan, where there's a character who does crosswords. And I was like, what the heck kind of crazy crosswords are these? And they're British crosswords. There.
Yeah.
Well, somebody is James P. Hogan.
I think they used to, this is where during World War II, they basically recruited people to the Bletchley Park,
oh, yeah,
I
yeah,
think,
yeah. Right.
via crossword.
Yeah, actually, I think it might have been his book, The Proteus Operation, which is about World War II. I mean, I wonder if maybe that was where it was referenced, but it was one of his novels where I first heard it. And it was just mm-hmm. like, I had no idea that crossword puzzles could be like the extra layer of puzzle, which is you have to figure out what the heck the clue means first.
Right. Right. It's interesting. Cause I feel like I've gotten pretty good at the New York Times ones these days. Like I can zip through those, but the cryptic crossword just like slows me back down to a crawl.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Makes
different
sense.
Skill.
All right. Well, thanks to everybody out there for subscribing and moving your feed. And we will check back in with you after I have traveled and Dan has puzzled. Bye, everybody.
Bye.